This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 261 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the FanDuel Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. To Kelce or not to Kelce? That's one of the big questions fantasy football managers are going to face during their drafts here in 2019 at the tight end position. But there are other big decisions to make this season at the position as well. Is it a year to spend up? Do you need an elite tight end? Should you target the middle rounds despite history telling us that those players are typically bad bets? And if you go with a late round tight end strategy, who should you target? As I alluded to on last week's tight end streaming episode, which you should probably listen to before hearing this one, but as I mentioned last week, today's show has a very special guest. He's one of my best friends in this fantasy football industry, and to me, he's one of the smartest analysts in the fantasy football industry. It's Rich Rebar from Sharp Football Analysis. I sat down with Rich at the end of last week to answer a lot of the pressing questions surrounding tight ends this season. Because this is a really, really interesting tight end year. It's so interesting that it apparently warrants its own two-week mini late-round podcast series. But I guarantee you guys will learn something from Rich on today's show. Before getting into the conversation between Rich and me, though, I wanted to remind you guys to head over to NumberFire.com and check out the NFL Draft Kit. With the Draft Kit, you can get rankings from yours truly, projections and auction values from NumberFire's algorithm, and you can customize the Draft Kit to fit your specific league settings to make sure you're drafting an awesome team with NumberFire's analytics. So sign up for NumberFire Premium and start your journey to a fantasy football championship today. Now let's hear from one of the GOATs in fantasy football, my man, Rich Rebar. Now, Rich, I think before we dig into 2019 specifically, I think listeners might be curious as to how you approach the tight end position each year. Are you usually someone who goes for an elite tight end early, or do you usually wait on the position, and why? Why do you do that?
All right, I'll try not to eat too much shot clock here because it kind of varies by league, you know, format, structure. But the majority of your traditional leagues start three wide receivers with flex spots or some kind of reception scoring is based in. I'm more of a wait on the position a bit. I have an entire tight end series coming out next week at Sharp Football. I believe the industry folks refer to that as a tease. It covers this a lot more in depth, but I'll touch on a few quick bullet points why I'm more like mid, later tight end. One is the decline of the position overall. Tight end targets have dropped by 94, 175, and 156 total targets from the season prior in each of the past three seasons, as running back targets have grown and even exceeded targets by tight ends the past two seasons. Running backs have 371 more targets than tight ends do league-wide over the past 2 years. The middle of the position has, for lack of better words, for fantasy, has just sucked. Like tight end 6 through 15 last year had their lowest scoring output at each spot since the 2008 season. And that doubled down because they did the same thing the year before in 2017. So we have two really just lackluster tight end years that are piggybacking off each other as running back targets and running backs are getting more involved in the passing game in the NFL. So that would kind of lead you to, well, then just go get one of the big tight end anchors, you know, to get that stability. But no position has a worse rollover in terms of week-to-week consistency than tight end. Over the past five seasons, less than half, 46% of the players that produce a starting caliber week in season, excluding week 17, go on to produce three or more starting caliber weeks, and only 20% go on to post six or more starting weeks in a season. And then you say, well, it's still the same thing. Get one of the big guys. But the thing is, we're bad at setting the market. ADP is the worst correlation to scoring than any other position than the tight end position. And then you factor in opportunity costs, the comparable scoring output these players have to running backs, wide receivers, paired with roster allotment, and then VBD not accounting for player cost. To buy that comfort, you know, to take a plunge on Kelce, Kittle, Ertz, I mean, you're paying for that comfort, but you have to use multiple players for those other positions. You're paying a tax on now three players that are coming off of career seasons. All three of these guys broke a record. I mean, Kelce's didn't stand because it was only there for an hour, but he broke the record. He broke the record. So you're paying on three seasons that probably are unlikely to repeat themselves from an overall stance. But if I do want to draft an early tight end, there are some structures that promote it. One is auctions. Standard scoring formats, leagues that require only two starting wide receivers, and then leagues without flex positions. All of that boost, you know, going early at tight end. You know, we talk about auctions a little bit. My favorite part of doing an auction is you get to mitigate that opportunity cost that we talked about of making a binary player choice as you would in a snake draft. No longer do you have to take Kelsey over a Juju Smith-Schuster or an alpha running back receiver. You have the opportunity to do both. You know, there's a cause and effect later on in the drafts, but you can hedge that opportunity cost. And then the other reason is, too, is that, you know, if I'm willing to take an early tight end, is because I don't really mind drafting rosters with roster weaknesses. The concept of winning your draft or the emphasis of building a perfect roster in August is one of the most overstated things about our game. I mean, you'll be lucky to make it through a fantasy season with 50 to 60% of your roster intact that you drafted. I rarely draft balanced rosters. I if you follow me in mock drafts and these industry things, I always generally have a roster weakness. Now, that said, I prefer that weakness to be something like a tight end position because the position itself under the fantasy umbrella is lackluster. And if I'm streaming or weak at a position, I inherently know I only face Kelsey, Ertz, Kittle owners 3 to 4 times over a regular season, and everyone else is in the same boat as me. Well, I have an advantage at those running back wide receiver spots. So, I mean, it's kind of nuanced, but I am, you know, more of a mid to late tight end guy to kind of bring it all back in a bow.
Yeah, that was a great answer. So you mentioned Travis Kelce. Of course, most people have him as the clear cut top tight end in fantasy football this year. I'm assuming you see it that way. Do you think that we should expect something similar to 2018, where obviously he had a big season? And that's, you know, especially true, you know, do you see that with the Tyreek Hill news?
I mean, yeah, I have him as, you know, the tight end one. I think, like, the consensus is, you know, a lot was tied to the thing that about Tyreek Hill, and we got the news today, actually, before we recorded this podcast, that Tyreek Hill is unlikely to be suspended in NFL news. So, I mean, if you look at it last year, even with the Chiefs being an elite offensive juggernaut last season, and if you go back, I had an initial article at Sharp Football that broke down just how effective the Chiefs offense were. If you look at the, like, the past 20 years, they were like first through fourth in like every offensive metric that you could think of. So if you look back at it last season, when they were that offensive juggernaut, Kelsey was a tight end one alongside Tyreek Hill being a wide receiver one just 5 times last season. In the 7 games that Tyreek Hill was 30 or wide receiver 30 or lower, Kelsey, those are the games Kelsey went nuts. He averaged seven catches for 93 yards, 20 PPR points, and he was the tight end 4 or higher in 6 of those 7 weeks. Now, in the 7 weeks that Tyreek Hill was a wide receiver 1 for fantasy, Kelsey was at 5.6 catches for 67 yards per game and just 2 touchdowns over those 7 games. That guy is still more than good enough to be the top tight end if you extrapolate those and you pepper in some touchdowns, you know, especially when you get both anyways. They meet in the middle over the course of the season. But Hill being suspended was really going to elevate him and justify him as one of those guys you can kind of put in the top 12. But if you look at overall running back, wide receiver, and tight ends and from a PPR like output, and you put them all in a bucket and just said this is what these players did each week, Kelsey was 24th in mean weekly scoring ranking, 55th in standard deviation of the same thing. So a player like Kelsey has provided, you know, the most high-level consistency at tight end. But the player right behind him currently in ADP is Juju Smith-Schuster, also accounted for more top 50 scoring weeks among running backs, wide receiver, tight ends than Kelsey, plays a position with far greater supply and demand. And then there's a trade-off, like I said, in that opportunity cost. And in the same measure I talked about above, Juju Smith-Schuster was 16th in mean weekly scoring rank and 14th in standard deviation. He was also just a more consistent player compared to the field. So, I mean, I expect those things for Kelsey to be the tight end one. I have him the tight end one. But, you know, I expect there to be some recoil and not just his performance with the Chiefs that I'm probably a little lower than the consensus in terms of ranking him amongst non-quarterbacks.
So it sounds like you wouldn't tout Travis Kelsey as a first round pick as some are. Generally speaking, where do you think that sweet spot is for Travis Kelsey in a typical 12 team league?
I think based on today's news with Tyreek, you know, looking like he's going to be suspended, I mean, I would have him kind of in that, you know, 20 to 24, back of the second round. You know, as I said last year, the record-breaking campaign, 24th in mean scoring. That's just kind of where I have him. You know, and then also you look at the Chiefs as well. They have the 23rd ranked passing schedule at Sharp Football Analysis. They have the 32nd ranked rushing schedule at Sharp Football Analysis. You know, and then I think when you look at just we talk about the ADP and us not really being great at setting it, I don't think a lot of people even remember, because the big three this year having such a boom last season, breaking those records, that there was a tight end drafted ahead of all those guys last year. It was Rob Gronkowski. Because the thing is, when you take a tight end in the first round or that early, your margin for error is completely suffocated to only one outcome. You can draft Saquon Barkley first, and if he ends up as like the RB5, the RB7 in points per game or even overall, your team is still probably going to be good or having a similar outcome. Not a ceiling outcome, but as a floor. But if you take the tight end one at the same level of cost, and he ends up as the tight end four, the tight end five, or even worse, you're just in too tough a spot to recover from that unless you really outkicked your subsequent draft coverage, since you're inherently chasing one of the running back and wide receiver spots for the remainder of your draft.
Yeah, and you really don't want to bank on that in the end. You know, you don't want to bank on you just being better at choosing these other players. Mm-hmm. You know, you're trying to play probability here. So there are two other tight ends that are being drafted, at least semi-close to Travis Kelce, those being George Kittle and Zach Ertz. Already talked about them or alluded to their seasons last year, but are you inclined to spend up to get them, maybe, since the opportunity cost isn't as high as Travis Kelce? Or are there enough red flags around those two players' profiles that you're just kind of passing?
I mean, like I said, bulk, I'm looking to go the tier beyond this one, but of the top three tight ends, when I'm in those auction formats and, you know, vice versa, or willing to bite on having a weakness somewhere else, Kittle, I think, is the best objective bet to make of the three, in my opinion, when you hash out age, career arc, target potential, and being one of the three guys of these guys that broke records that still has some regression that in the positive end from a scoring upside. Kittle ranked 15th. Among all tight ends and wide receivers and expected fantasy output in the red zone last year, yet he ranked 42nd in actual output. His 3.6% touchdown rate was the lowest of all top 10 scoring tight ends. Now, his offense isn't as good as the Chiefs, but with the 49ers getting Garoppolo back under center, the top two receivers for the 49ers depth chart right now, Dante Pettis and Debo Samuel, they have 27 career NFL receptions.
Right,
I mean,
right.
Kittle's not going to have a 70 target gap over the next 49ers player like he did last year, but it's undisputable he's their best player in their passing game enter next season, and he still has scoring upside. Like, Ertz is a little bit trickier because I believe his floor is still good enough that there's no way he completely busts out without an injury. But that said, he's not a player that's creating huge plays on his own through yards after the catch like Kelce and Kittle are. He averages just 3.7 yak per reception for his career. And the Eagles have added so many options this offseason to kind of threaten his lofty volume that he had last year. With all the issues that the Eagles had last year, he ballooned up to 9.8 targets per game after receiving 7.5. 7.6 and 7.9 targets per game over the previous three seasons. You know, Alshon Jeffrey good to go from the start. They added DeSean Jackson, another step forward, and maybe some snaps for Dallas Goedert. Possible red zone package use of the rookie J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. The Eagles are just in a better spot to reduce Ertz back to that 7.5 target per game range, who is still a very good player at his position, but, you know, also not worth, you know, a pick, probably more worth where he was going last year around pick 40 than where he's going this year, you know, which is a little bit higher because he's not one of those game-breaking type tight ends. I joked in Tampa Bay when I saw you that he's kind of like the more modern passing booms, like souped up Jason Witten. He's like,
yeah,
really,
exactly.
He's deluxe Jason Witten for fantasy.
Right. Yeah. I feel like, you know, we were kind of talking about this before the podcast, but with Zach Ertz, I'm almost expecting more of that 2017 season rather than the 2018 season for a lot of reasons, all the reasons that you mentioned. There's also the fact that before the Eagles got Golden Tate last year, Zach Ertz's target share was up to like 28%. And then it started to fall whenever they got that extra body in there, because the team around Zach Ertz last year was very banged up. There weren't many options for them to go to. And then on top of that, the Eagles were a pretty pass heavy team last year, at least more so than what we've seen under Peterson. And they should be good this year. I mean, I think you and I would agree that they're probably a top three team in the league. And so because of that, you get more positive game scripts, which would lead to less passing. So I think Zach Ertz, you know, people are basically buying a floor. And to me, buying a floor at the tight end position doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah, nailed it.
So let's look at the middle round tight ends, you know, the next tier. You know, historically, and I've talked about this a lot on the podcast, but historically, I've found that middle round tight ends are kind of a trap. You know, they don't seem to perform any better than the lower end tight end ones. This is through looking at average draft position versus where these guys finish. But with that being said, it seems like this year, more than any other season I can remember in fantasy football, the market has seemed to sort of correct itself. Instead of having those geriatric volume tight ends like Greg Olsen or Delanie Walker, you now have these youngsters in O.J. Howard, Hunter Henry, and Evan Engram, and they're kind of intriguing. So I'm curious if you're buying into that tier this season.
Yeah, this is kind of the tier where I'm shopping. You nailed it. For the past few seasons, that part of the tight end landscape was the easiest to avoid because it was just made up of declining veteran assets who are objectively on the back slopes of their career arcs, allowing you to wait longer in the position, play for upside like you did with Ertz in 2017, like you did with Kittle last year. In 2018, you look at tight ends 4-8 in ADP. They were Jimmy Graham, Greg Olsen, Evan Ingram, who actually fits the mold we're talking about, is there again this year, Delanie Walker, and Kyle Rudolph. That's it made no sense risk missing out on the ceilings of those players because they were largely unlikely to tilt weeks in your favor solely on their own. That's just a fact. Now this season, that entire next tier is filled with high upside options, guys who can threaten to be a top three guy. You know, I think that next tier, any of those guys, we can talk about them being, you know, in that mix to be higher draft picks. Like, this is the lowest their ADP is going to be for this part of, to this point in their careers. I think all of these guys, there's an argument to make that they can make a jump. You know, O.J. Howard, you know, he just hasn't been healthy. Tampa Bay lost 37% of their team targets, fourth highest share in the league, just rocking, you know, big plays, 16.6 yards per catch through two seasons. And then you could talk about Bruce Arians, you know, tight end history, but Howard's at least at worst, the third best option they have to throw the ball.
Yeah, right.
Like,
right.
And you got Hunter Henry. He's just 24 years old, a full year plus off the ACL. In just 13 career games, he's had five or more targets. He's averaged 14 fantasy points per game. And you got Evan Ingram, you know, his third season. You know, he made the jump to 9-point yards target last year. His splits with Odell Beckham are great. I think he's the most fragile of the group because I think that, you know, they add another intermediate target and go to Golden Tate. And then you have to prepare for Daniel Jones playing this year. You just do.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that means less for Saquon Barkley than it does the other Giants players. But when you're investing in just a onesie position like Evan Ingram, I think that has to play into your mind for the type of equity it takes to acquire Evan Ingram. And then you also have the guys right behind them. I mean, in ADP, Jared Cook and Vance McDonald play in offense as we project to be among the league's best. So, I mean, it's just a better middle portion with higher upside than owners have been willing to invest in, you know, in previous years where they're taking those guys that you mentioned, those older guys.
Yeah, so you just talked about Vance McDonald and Jared Cook. You could maybe even throw David Njoku maybe in that tier if you're high on him. But do you think that one of those tight ends either should be talked about in that tier with O.J. Howard, Hunter Henry, and Evan Ingram? Or do you think that those guys, Jared Cook, Vance McDonald in particular, are correctly priced right now? And are they more attractive to you because of that price?
Yeah, I mean, so I generally try to look at Howard and Henry first, and if I can get them at a spot I want, and then Cook, McDonald, you know, like I said, Ingram is one of those guys that I'm also invested in Ingram and Dynasty, so I can hedge a little bit as far as I play fantasy. Not everyone else has that luxury. I'm looking to basically, that's what I'm looking, those two guys, can I get them at the right price? And then if not, then I'm looking at Cook and McDonald, then I'm waiting after that. I will say that, like, I'm objectively not into Njoku's ADP, but from an objective stance of factoring in offense, player career arc, and, you know, like, he fits the mold of, like, a dude that could definitely still outkick our expectations, especially if there's an injury there. And, you know, Todd Monken's influence and more up-tempo and pass happiness takes place, you know, precedence in that offense this year. McDonald is a guy that, like, he's starting to give me a little bit of a Chris Hogan vibe of last season.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I'm into him. I was more on the positive end. I'm still on the positive end. But, you know, we got a 29-year-old guy who really hasn't done it. He's never been a tight end one. We did this with Hogan, you know, last year. You know, we kind of know the Steelers are going to have a decline in overall volume. Might not just be as good as passing game overall. But, you know, a lot of the positives line up. You know, they're missing 33% of their team targets. They also lost Jesse James, a direct competitor for Vance McDonald. The only guy that played snaps on their roster at tight end position is Xavier Grimble, who's tallied he's had 22 catches through four NFL seasons. Not really a threat to Vance McDonald. And, you know, Vance has never played a full season through 6 years so far. So, like, it's like banking on that to be like a career breakout is probably on the lower end of the spectrum. But, I mean, the guy that is in competition with him in terms of ADP also fit that mold 2 years ago in Jared Cook, who's now turned in back-to-back tight end one seasons playing with Derek Carr. And last year, he set career highs across the board. We know he won't lead the Saints in receiving opportunity like he did a year ago. But I think he's also being drafted at a correct spot. Like you said, I think previous years he might have been like the tight end five, the tight end six. But we've got these upside guys. And then he's still getting an overall offensive upgrade in New Orleans. You know, remember, a lot of people were down on Michael Thomas last year because he had like a a career outlier in target share for the Saints last year. Everyone was like, the Saints don't give their wide receiver on this many targets. But when you broke it down by just looking at their depth chart, you're like, they had to, and they were gonna have to do it again. They've really just thrown the ball to Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara the past two seasons. But you know, prior to those seasons, they were an offense predicated on a little more balanced distribution. But they've just been forced to go to those two players. And then Cook has never been a touchdown scorer. He's got just 25 career touchdowns, but he's also going to be playing with a quarterback throwing 30 or more touchdowns in 10 of the past 11 seasons. I think that Cook's not going to be early career Jimmy Graham, but I also don't think he's going to be Kobe Fleener either.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes total sense. And the way that I've kind of viewed David Njoku is he, and I know this is kind of a cop-out answer, but he's like the quintessential best ball guy, right? Like I think we might just see a lot of unpredictability more so with him. You know, obviously the tight end position is unpredictable inherently, but with him it just seems like he's your best ball target in that tier if you want to get at least a little bit of exposure to Njoku. So we see a lot of late round tight ends. We see them break out all the time. Last season, we had George Kittle. We even had Jared Cook last year to a degree. Who are some of your favorite late round dart throws? Of course, you mentioned that you usually are going with a later round tight end approach. So who are some of those dart throws who you think have a legitimate shot to be an every week starter?
So, yeah, I mean, we're not looking to hit singles when we're going to these, where we're getting this tier. This is why I bypass the other guys. You know, if I miss out on Cook or McDonald, I'm not going to just do the next round, come back and take Delanie Walker or Jimmy Graham. I'm more or less just wait and be willing to stream. Because like I said, I mean, everyone's going to be in that same boat outside the top three. You know, I'm not going to make up a lot of ground. Obviously, the easy like layup answer is, you know, a lot of people will say Dallas Goedert, but his range of outcomes are all tied to just Zach Ertz missing time. So I'll skip past him. So there's two guys I've been drafting a lot of. One is Mike Gesicki, because I just said he's typically just easy to grab. He's cheap. And then when you're looking at tight ends who could theoretically lead their teams in receiving, he has the lightest path to resistance. He played 50% of the Miami snaps in just four games as a rookie. I'm willing to place some semblance of faith that Brian Flores and Chad O'Shea, coming from New England, understand how to maximize personnel to a degree, at least more than Adam Gase did. And then if you look at Gesicki, you know, we all know the athletic profile, but he was also a guy who improved every year at the collegiate level. So I'm banking on him doing that, you know, taking a shot at him doing that at the NFL level as well, continue to improve. And we know rookie tight ends anyways, they're all always flimsy. And then I also am in the belief that we were just a year early on rookie Seals-Jones, like the push for rookie Seals-Jones. I mean, he has familiarity with the system and head coach. He was recruited to Texas A&M. He played a wide receiver in that same in an air raid offense. Now he's playing tight end, but not really tight end because, you know, he was seventh of for all tight ends and routes run per snap. He was eighth of tight ends in overall air yardage last year. And that was in an offensive climate that was just a travesty, the most abysmal offense we've seen in the last decade of football. So I think that he's another guy I'm willing to, you know, kind of take on to a guy that's not going to be one of those guys that's just going to get me hit some singles, that's going to have some big weeks, you know, in play with him.
Yeah, he was someone at the very beginning of the offseason. He was one of my dart throw buy low tight ends or players on my buy low podcast, mostly because he's basically completely free, right? But now you have this situation where his peripherals were amazing last year. They were phenomenal. Mm-hmm. It's just that he couldn't bring it all together, but it's very difficult for any player to bring anything together last year in that offense. So that makes a lot of sense. So with all this being said, Rich, if you could sort of sum up your 2019 tight end draft strategy in just a few sentences, how would you describe your approach?
All right, really easy. Explore Kittle and Kelce in auctions. Otherwise, Kittle's the first tight end. I'll see where he goes. Monitor tier two. Try to land one of Howard, Henry, or Cook. Perhaps McDonald, if the room lets me have a discount. And preferably of that group, I like Hunter Henry the most, as a FYI. If I miss on that wave, don't settle for singles. Aim for upside, because at the very worst, I'll be streaming and only have to face Kelce, Kittle, or Ertz teams 3 to 4 times the regular season, while I'm likely to have strength advantages elsewhere at running back and receiver.
Awesome. Perfect. Now, before I let you go, Rich, listeners of this show who have been around for a couple of years, basically since this show started, the Late Round Podcast started, they might remember that we talked about Travis Kelce before. This is not the first time that you've been on the show. And the last time that you were on the show, you did a manual air horn. You did it with your mouth. So I think the listeners need to hear another manual air horn.
All right. Well, we'll at least tie it into a take then. All right. I'll say this, that by this time next year, we'll be definitely drafting Hunter Henry over Zach Ertz.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Rich, thanks so much for joining today to talk some tight ends. For those of you who aren't following Rich and all of his work, which can now be found on sharpfootballanalysis.com, you can follow him on Twitter at Lord Reeves. And of course, you can follow me on there too at Late Round QB. And don't forget to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast pretty much anywhere podcasts can be found. Thanks for listening, everyone. I'll be back in your ears later in the week with a new mailbag show.